Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Get us better away? Now, Charlie. Welcome to Suplexes and Cervezas with Chavo Guerrero Jr. I'm your host, Chavo Guerrero Jr.
Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast today. I hope everyone's having a lovely day. I know I am. I'm just getting back from a big trip to Florida from a wedding of one of my good friends, Big Mike Knox. You might remember him from WWE and ECW and also in TNA from Aces and Eights. So we had a great time at the wedding. A lot of the old boys were there. The Big LG was there. Dolph Ziggler showed up out of the blue. Nick Aldis, who's the NWA champion, and his lovely wife, Mickey James. We had some other ones there. It was a good time, fun time. And every time I get together with those guys and girls, we start reliving our old days and the beers start flowing. So it was a good time. And I'm detoxing and I'm right back to my workouts again and back on that treadmill and Stairmaster and diet. It's all about the diet. And when I say diet, I'm not talking about dieting like salads and stuff, but just eating super clean. And that's kind of what I do. That's the key. You can work out all you want. If you're not dieting correctly, then it's just not going to work. But today on the podcast, we have Roman Rozelle. So Roman is an up-and-coming wrestler, and he has a big storied past. I mean, this guy, he's a tough, tough dude. I mean, he's an ex-Green Beret, which that in itself is pretty amazing. And he talks about how he got to that point, why he joined the armed forces in the first place. Also, not only that, he is the oldest walk-on on the Arizona State wrestling team history. So for all of you that don't know, Arizona State is a powerhouse in the college wrestling world, along with Oklahoma State, Iowa, Penn State, and others, of course. But to be a walk-on on a powerhouse wrestling team like that means that you're pretty damn good. He talks all about that. For example, me, I wrestled my entire life and was never good enough to walk onto a powerhouse wrestling, college wrestling team. So big hats off to Roman on that. He talks about his time in DDP yoga and how that's helped him and now coming up in the pro wrestling ranks. So I hope you enjoy this podcast. I know you will. Nice little interview with Roman Rozelle, and that's up next. All right, brother. Hey, man, thanks for being here, man. I totally appreciate you even being taking time out of your day and deciding to jump on Suplexes and Cervezas. I did an interview the other day, and we changed it from Suplexes and Cervezas to Suplexes and Champagne. I was in a champagne mood, so. So what's going on, man? Where'd you grow up at?
I grew up in Apache Junction, Arizona.
Okay. Where's that close to?
It's Mesa. It's like a suburb of Phoenix.
Mesa. Yeah, sure. Okay. I know that pretty well. What is this popping up for?
Hey, most people in Arizona think of Apache Junction as like the armpit of Arizona.
They do?
Yeah, they do, yeah. So if you ever meet somebody from Arizona, just mention AJ.
AJ, that's funny. You know what, though? That's, you can hear that by a lot of places. Anybody who's not from there will probably say that it is, or maybe even places, people that are from there will say that it is, right?
Yeah. But I'm proud of it. I love that place.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, man. No, for sure. Did you grow up amateur wrestling?
No. Well, I started in junior high.
Oh, wow, junior high. So you didn't even wrestle as a young kid.
No. See, because my parents divorced when I was real young.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My mom got into a toxic relationship, one after the other, and everything that comes with addiction, abuse, you know, moving. Anytime rent was due, we moved. And so I never really got to play Little League or Parks and Rec, those games. I mean, I did a couple times, but by the time I was 13, I already went to 9 different schools. And that's not including coming back to the same school, you know, because my mom would move away, get beat up or whatever. We'd move back in with my grandpas or something like that. She'd meet another guy, say all the right things. We'd move away. It was just like one of those cycles. So it wasn't until we actually kind of got taken away from my mom when I was 13, my sister and I, and moved in with my dad, and it was more stable. And I was able to go to middle school, and that's where I was able to finally start playing sports.
Wow. It's a hard day when you realize that your parents are human and go through the same trials and tribulations as we do. I mean, I remember as a kid, you know, my father, I just always put him on a pedestal. That was, you know, that was my guy. That was my idol, my hero. And then to see him, you know, have his flaws and have struggles in life and stuff, it's like, it makes you realize like, wow, like I thought he was Superman. You know, what happened? There's not supposed to be any chinks in Superman's armor, you know?
Yep.
Right?
Sure.
That's crazy, man. How'd you start wrestling?
So I was huge into pro wrestling like my whole life.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, my baby book, it says, there's not too many things that survive, but I do have a baby book and it says like, you know, this kid loves to watch wrestling in all sports, 17 months old. So that was like, that crossed the bar. I never got rid of it. And it actually was that outlet, you know, because if my mom or whoever was getting abused or I was hiding, you know, doing whatever I had to do, like I would put on like that different mask or like the Ultimate Warrior or something like that, at least to kind of hide my scaredness or something, my fear.
Yeah.
And sometimes I would, you know, call the cops. I would get enough, you know, balls to do that or something like that, or, you know, but that's where that came from. Just so it was like my only escape was like Jesus and pro wrestling. So when I got the opportunity to wrestle in middle school, I knew I had nothing to do with it, but dude, it was prime time, like 1997, you know, you got NWO going hot, the Monday Night Wars. So I was just like, yeah, it made me feel like I was a part of professional wrestling, even though it was amateur wrestling. And then I found a lot of success in it right off the bat.
I think we got to make a song about that. Jesus and pro wrestling, man. That's right.
Yeah.
That sustained me for sure, you know, and I'm sure many more people that, you know, are in pro wrestling. I'm sure that there's a big Jesus factor in there. That's pretty cool, man. Yeah, you know, that's a lot of times that we do, we sit there and have to escape, you know, and everybody's different, but that's very similar to myself, man. It was a lot of Jesus and pro wrestling, man.
And Pepe. Pepe.
The only difference is I had a wrestling ring in the backyard, so I was able to jump in the ring.
Right.
How did you do as a wrestler growing up?
I did really well. Like my first 2 years, like, I mean, it was middle school, just wrestling tournaments. I never lost. I was the like district champion both years. So.
Oh, wow. So you were just a natural right from the start.
Yeah. And I didn't really have like a lot of skill or technique, but I had like that fight from beneath, like never quit attitude. And, you know, I was always just trying to like prove something to myself or get validation. So like I really would like hulk up and do something, and I ended up winning, and it just every time.
Yeah, you, you're a mad kid, man. You know,
yeah.
Mad, you know, yeah. When you go through a lot of trials like that and trauma, man, it makes you strong. It makes you strong from the inside, you know?
And it was, cause AJ has a bad rap for Apache Junction. So anytime I'd wrestle, it was one of those things. It wasn't just for me. It was for that whole stereotype, you know, like, hey, this AJ kid's going to whip you. Like, you know, I remember I didn't even realize how bad it was till I got in high school and would wear like my Letterman jacket outside of Apache Junction, like going to like a place like Scottsdale or like some yuppie town. And they'd be like looking at you so different. You're like, what? I'm like, God, man, this is how we all dress. This is what we all look like, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You're representing and getting criticized at the same time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I hear that. That's cool, man. So Phoenix, man, it's hot. Gosh damn. Phoenix
good
is hot. It's a dry hot, so it's not hot, right? Oh my God. Yeah. I've been there many, many times and I've been like, man, it's like I gotta get out of here. Man, you know.
Yeah, that was good.
So then you wrestled in high school then also.
Yeah, I wrestled in high school, and I also had I started to go down a similar path as, you know, my family in high school. My mom got out of jail, and I actually was a little hesitant about seeing her every now and again. And what's kind of like embarrassing or kind of shameful to talk about, but when I would get with her, like in order for us to kind of, like bond or get close, like, you know, I would do drugs with her, you know. It was like one of the things, like I grew up in an area where that was just really affluent around everybody, and that was kind of like, you know, I was 15, 16, I'm like, hey, I could go out and do this with a bunch of people, but I'd rather do it with you. Kind of held my mom hostage.
You're just a kid trying to bond with your mom, you know. It's nothing that you're doing, you know, that you're just trying to bond with your mom. I see it. I could have gone that route also. Thank God my dad wasn't going to, you know, bring cocaine around me at the time, but at the same time, it could have been very easily there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. So there's no shame in that. You're trying to, that's all you know. That's what you know.
But I mean, I was smoking meth with her.
I gotcha. Yeah.
Well, going straight to like from A to Z, like right off the bat. But I still stayed like good in school, and I kind of kept it quiet. That's because I didn't want to ruin, like, because everybody knew me as like, you know, that fighter, that Jesus kid. So I was like ashamed to even know that I was battling with my demons and finding a bad escape, you know, and of all things with my mom. So I was just always trying to hide that. And then still, you know, I was bullied a lot. I was overweight. So it was just a lot of stuff. Like I didn't understand like why I couldn't catch a break. And I would hang around those type of people because they kind of made me feel better about myself. Even though we'd be passing the bowl or doing whatever, they'd be like, oh, you don't need to do this. Like, you know, you're different. You can be better. I was getting counseled by the drug addicts. And that's actually kind of what led me out of it. Like, you know, I ended up having a kid right in high school. So it was like right off the bat, they were like, hey, even though you kind of not necessarily messed up because they saw me doing bigger and better things to get out of AJ. But when that happened, they were just like, hey, step up your game fast. And that's what I did. And I ended up getting a wrestling scholarship. Thank God, because I was just about to not really give up, but I was going to be a pro wrestler. I was going to go on the road and do my own thing and try to make a living.
So, yeah, don't do that. That would have been really the wrong path.
Everybody kept telling me like, you're not made for pro wrestling. I'm like, ugh. So I took the wrestling.
Actually, you sound exactly like a pro wrestler who's smoking meth and and doing all that stuff. Nah, I'm just playing. No, man, you know what? That's cool that you decided to grow up in a sense and choose the right path, because there's that road, especially for young kids. It's tough. You know, I got two, one's a 21 to 18 now, but man, you're always thinking like there's paths, you know. That's, you can only do so much as an adult, as a parent, and lead them. The rest is up to them. If they get, you know, mixed up with the wrong crowd, or if they're, you know, they're going to have those decisions, and it's like, you're just praying to God that they take that right path, you know, and don't veer off too much, you know. Yeah. That's tough.
That was always my thing, to try to show them, like, even if you do veer off, you know, you can get back on and you can change. Like, it doesn't define you. So that's what I've always tried to lead by example and have like a history of that. And that's what actually has helped me keep going. Like when I, you know, come up short, you know, I just look, all right, man, you can get back on the right turn, get back on the road straight ahead and, you know, be a beacon of light to a lot of other people, even when you don't feel like you're one.
Yeah, totally. You know, it's like your actions don't define you. I think it's what you do after your actions and how you you handle that adversity, you know.
Yeah.
You know, how you rise up is like, you know, that saying that, you know, every time you fall down, it's not how many times you fall down, but it's how many times you get back up. And that's true, man. It's true. We all fall, you know, several different times, but it's how many times you just get back up and get back on that horse and you know, keep riding.
Yeah. Some people just get beat down so much that they just.
You give up.
Take it. Yeah. They're like, fuck, man. You know, I just stopped caring. Like, you know, that's what I've always been around. And we're like, yeah. Life's too hard, but you just get used to it. I'm like, no.
It's easier not to try. It's easier to sit on the couch and do drugs as opposed to get your ass up, get moving, get out there, do a job and do what's right. That's hard.
It is. Yeah.
It's harder. Yeah, for sure. It's a lot easier not to do anything and not give a shit. But we all know that that's not right. That's not the right thing. You know, it's like there's this book that I read called The Thin Line. And it talked about what makes you comfortable now is going to make you uncomfortable in the future. It's comfortable to sit on my couch and not do anything, but that only lasts so long to when I get, you know, in 10 years or 15 years, I was really comfortable and now I'm really uncomfortable because I don't have a house. I don't have a car. I don't have a bank account. I don't have anything, but what makes you uncomfortable now makes you very comfortable in the future. It's uncomfortable to get off that couch and get to the gym and start training and hustle and, you know, do a podcast and do whatever and, you know, just hustle, 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 hustle. But in the future, I'm going to be comfortable by having that. So I always try to live by that. It's, you know, it's uncomfortable now, but in the future.
Yeah, a lot of people don't like to starve that immediate gratification. They just want it right away.
Yeah, Matt, for sure. So then you got a... You got a scholarship.
Yeah.
To where?
I went to Northwestern College.
And how long did you wrestle there for?
I went there for a year, and my first year, I ended up during the season tore my labrum. So it was the second time I had to get shoulder surgery. So like my wrestling career was pretty much not done, but at least for that season.
Yeah.
And I came home for summer break because I, you know, it was out of state. Went back to Arizona, and then my girlfriend, wife. You know, ex-wife now, got pregnant again. So now I had two kids going back into the school year. And my coaches were like, oh, we knew you weren't ready to go back.
Two kids now. Oh, God. How old were you? Two kids?
I'm 19.
Wow. That's, you know, hey, well, welcome to manhood, man, right? Grow up. If you're not growing up, you're there now.
And that's where I had to make that decision to join the military. Because
You left college, you left wrestling and said, you know, I gotta pay some bills.
Like I wanted to, it was tough because, you know, me and my ex-wife at the time, I was like, I need 3 more years. I'm going to graduate. I'll have a great job, this and that. But meanwhile, I wasn't there, you know, her having to be pregnant or take care of another kid, couch surf, you know, with my family, her family, whatever, you know, and we lived off of government assistance, you know, those, everything that was, you know, was provided, like we were living off of, and I didn't want to make that a career, you know,
right?
Because like, they're there, like I grew up seeing that, like some people refuse to work because they'll just get those assistance programs and they're there, but I'm like, you know, I'm 19, I was like, I have no excuse now. I can't say like, hey, I'm a kid or I'm too young, you know. I was living on my own since 16, so I withdrew, got my family together, and I was like, now what? I feel like I'm too good to work at a convenience store or, you know, Home Depot. Not that those are bad things, but for me, I was like, you know, I'm an entertainer. I'm in for something great. But again, entertainment at that point is not going to get me anywhere because I have a kid on the way. I need insurance and all that other stuff. The last thing I wanted to do was join the military. I hated it. Mainly because I was a wrestler. You know, wrestling so hard. The practice, the lifestyle. And in my head, I just remember doing army crawls in practice. So I just assumed the army is so much more tough and intense. I was like, I can't live that life every day. But that's how desperate I got. I was like, you know, screw it. And then when I joined, it wasn't.
You think you broke up for a second. You said you can't live that life every day.
Yeah, no, I felt like, you know, I can't live that life. But, you know, I said, I got pretty desperate. So I just joined and said, you know, I'll figure things out on the way down. And I did that. And of course, it had its grueling moments and stuff like that, but it wasn't what I expected. It was like, it taught me better structure, more appreciation. Now I was forced to do things, you know, where I'd complained about waking up for school at 9 or 10 or complain about other things. I had real things to complain about. So it gave me a different perspective and it kind of shaped me. And again, I was sober, you know, doing the right thing. So it was like a good thing. And I was the first person, well, I was the first male to graduate high school, let alone go to college. And then when I messed up, everybody was like, ha ha, you're no different. And then so when I joined the military, it kind of like revitalized me, like a resurrected me, and showed people like, no, I'm still exactly what I said. Got on the right path. And then I did that, you know, multiple tours right off the bat.
Isn't that sad when people sit there and say, ha ha, I like to point the finger at you. I knew you'd mess up. I knew that wasn't who you were. They're waiting for you, right?
Yeah.
But yet they're still on their mom's couch at 40, you know. It's like, guys, the most successful people that I've met have always been like, dude, you can do it. They've been like, they pump you up.
Yeah.
Because they know, they've been there. They've had people tell them that they can't do it, right?
And
you,
sure.
Yeah, so it's kind of like fuels your fire. It's like, it's up to you to, all right, am I that person or am I who I think I am, right?
There was something I came across and it's just, and I still got to use it today. It's like, you'll never be criticized by someone who's doing more than you. You'll only be criticized by someone doing less.
That's right.
And it's, yeah.
That's just, right.
It's like, why is there so many haters? And you're like, think about it. It's like, because, you know, they see
you'll
that.
You'll only be criticized by people doing less than you.
Yeah.
You'll never be criticized by people doing more than you. Be proud of. That's great. That's great. That's a great saying right there. I remember that one. Anybody listening, remember that one?
Yeah, it's been my lifeline this week.
Yeah, man. So then what happens? So then you get decide to join the Army.
Yeah. So I was in the Army. I was a 19 kilo, which is a tanker. You watch Fury with Brad Pitt?
Yeah, sure.
That was me. I was a tank commander.
Oh, really? Oh, you're Brad Pitt. Yeah,
really. Looked like him too. No, just kidding. No, but I did, I was a tanker, but I was never on a tank, like went straight to combat. And we were like with the 82nd Airborne. So we're doing like air assault missions, just kicking doors, special forces stuff.
Really?
Deployments were like 15 months long, you know, at the very beginning of the war. So it was rough.
Oh my God.
And
what country were you in?
I was in Iraq.
In Iraq. Wow.
The first few tours.
What year is this?
This is 2006.
Oh my goodness.
So 2006. And I went early. So it was a 15-month tour, but I was, you know, a private. So I volunteered for ADVON to go up there, load, unload off the boats and stuff like that. All the vehicles, tanks, Bradleys, Humvees. So I was actually gone further from my family than that 15 months. And it was because I needed extra money. I was like, deployment's extra money, but I didn't realize how much that was going to do to the family being gone. And not only that, was we didn't have internet over there in Iraq. We did, but it was really sketchy and they would black it out if anybody got killed. So it's like, I would maybe get to talk to my family once every 2 months. And that's no joke. Like, that's not just me. That's just anybody that was in that time. And then it slowly got better, but.
Wow. So they have no clue. They have no clue if you're alive or what's going on with you there.
It's like, no news is.
That's good tough, news, man. Gosh, hats off to military.
No news is good news. And one time it was Mother's Day.
No news is good news. Yeah.
Mother's Day, the story, there's a thing where, you know, the Fox Sports did a little quick segment on me and it talked about me surviving a suicide blast. But I wasn't really in such close proximity as, you know, my lieutenant and my sergeant was, who lost his legs and the other one died. It was, but my wife didn't know that. She was with my sergeant.
How close were you to that? How close?
Oh, I mean, I was pretty.
How close were you to that actual?
Oh, I was
really
maybe 5 meters away.
And
yeah, I was.
Now was it a car? Or was this guy just walking up? What was it?
So we did like a little called a snap TCP, a basically like a hasty tactical checkpoint where you just kind of block off near far side security of all these vehicles, and you kind of search them, you know. But they've been doing that at this time for what? 5, 6, 7 years. So they already knew like the customs, like, hey, this is just a way of life now, kind of like us with masks. We know we put a mask on.
Wow.
So it was for them. They were like, okay, they know when convoys are coming by, stop. So if someone doesn't, then they're kind of sketchy. We had already been on a 3-day patrol, and it was Mother's Day, so we were ready to go back in and actually get something other than MREs or, you know, nothing to eat. So I was like, cool, man, we can hit the DFAC if we get back on time now. And then, of course, my lieutenant wants to stop and check these cars. You're like, no, like, we've been out, like, pulling guard duty all night, doing patrols. Like, we just want a good meal or something. And he's going to, and it was brunch, so the chow hall's going to close, you know. And we're like, gosh, man, you got to stop. And of course, like, his intuition or whatever, cosmic force, God, like, had to stop. And these two guys who wouldn't get out of the vehicle got out simultaneously and started spraying with their AKs and blew up.
Yeah, really?
At the same time. Yeah. And when they blew up, like, you know, the blast killed my lieutenant and the legs of my sergeant. And, you know, I was on top of the vehicle, so I just got down, me and my battle buddy. And we had to, like, start doing immediate first aid and, you know, had to put everything, like, had to be in control with all the chaos. And you do that muscle memory, but it was just like, it just clicks and you do what you got to do, and everything else you just kind of forget about and stay in that moment. And so that was that event. But my sergeant's wife was with mine at Olive Garden. So they'd got a call. It was like, hey, you know, so-and-so was injured, this and that. And they didn't hear anything about me. So like my wife was, she thought I'd got killed or injured because they didn't tell. They're just like, hey, there was K, there was wounded. And they just knew we were that team together, that little 4-man team.
Wow.
So it wasn't until like I got back and like begged, like, please, can I just use a satellite phone to call home? And they're like, no. I was like, I'm like, I bet you, like, she's thinking something happened to me. But I was lucky that survived it, you know. And so I called, and yeah, she was like, what? It was almost like she was talking to a ghost. She was like, you know, I thought you were dead. They, you know, they called Daniel's, you know, wife, and we knew you were together. So it was just like crazy. I'm like, damn. And that wasn't the first time. It happened again later. I was in another accident and I had a spinal injury, and they couldn't get a hold of my wife, and they'd called my dad or my grandma, somebody like that. And they're like, hey, your son was, you know, air back to, you know, hospital in Iraq. He had a spinal injury, this and that. We're in critical condition. And it just got spun out of control. I mean, this doesn't happen all the time. It's just when you go over and over and over, like, that's all how I lived. Like, for 10 straight years, it was just deployment, 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 deployment.
Now, the second time, was that another bombing or?
Yeah. So I usually just go with the minimum because I've spent lots of years over there. And anybody that's over there will be in like an IED blast, a firefight. Minimum was like 15, like little IED explosions. Only 6 of them were kind of bad where I got concussed. But there was still a gap between those, but the one I just mentioned.
So how many explosions have you been in like that?
Oh, just, a minimum 15. But again, they weren't always as crazy. But I mean, you're doing patrol every day.
Well, something's blowing up by you. I mean, it's pretty amazing. Yeah, it's not like it's like you blow it off. I'm being like, what the hell? Like, if it happened here in my neighborhood, I'd be like, okay, dude, this is, I gotta move. But yeah it's like you're sitting there being in 15 blasts like that. It's like, it's just a matter of time before it, you know, it gets you.
You're hoping it does because you're tired of living like that. You're like, gosh, man, at least if I get blown up, I'll go home and get patched up and I won't have to live this, like, you know. Here's, you know, 12 hours out on patrol and come in for a 2-hour nap. Then you got to pull a 4-hour, you know, tower security guard. Then you got to go do maintenance for another hour or two. Then you got to go back out on patrol. You know, it was just, you're talking like every day like that. You hardly got any free time. And if you did, you'd probably use it in the gym or stand in line to wait to get a phone call or any of that stuff. So it was just rough to where you're just like, dude, I would be not necessarily reckless, but I would try to be like super heroic. And like, something happens to me, it happens. But in the meantime, I'm going to save this guy, or, you know, I'm going to be Chuck Norris, but really you're just like, whatever happens, happens. But, and then you get survivor's guilt all the time. So you're just like, dude, what is going on? And then it just kept repeating. So it just, in all those years where you don't think nothing's bothering you, it just kind of builds up and builds up over time.
Yeah. PTSD, like crazy, bro. Right. So then you're sitting there and you're over there and you decide to, you need more money.
So I went to Special Forces. Yeah. Well, no, I became a Green Beret because the deployments were shorter, 6 months, but I also, I felt at that time, the way that the regular army was working, like it just, I felt like I was going to eventually get killed. So even though I said I wanted something to happen, I really didn't.
Sure.
But like going out for no reason, it's like almost like picking a fight. Like we would do presence patrols, but it's like, come on, like, and really you were just doing it because somebody wanted to say on paper, look, we did 36, blah, 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 or this and that, blah, blah, blah. Really, it was just like, you didn't even really need to do that. Like, so yeah. Special Forces was like, we're not going to do anything unless we have air assets, good planning, you know, this. So that's why I was like, I need to be around those type of people that are door kickers like me and will do anything, but are smart about it too.
Wow. So you tried out, did you have to try out for Green Beret, like do tests and stuff? How did that work?
You have to have like a certain score. So I had to actually retake like my whole ASVAB test to get my scores up. And then it's volunteer, you go to recruiter and they'll let you go to selection. And then selection's, you know, 21 days. And it's like how that song where it says, you know, the Ballad of the Green Beret, 100 men will test today, only three win the Green Beret. So the selection is just the 3-week part. That's just to get into the Special Forces qualification course to earn your Green Beret. And that takes some minimum, you know, 1 year to 2 years. But the selection process, we started with, you know, close to 400, and you're down by the third week, you're down to maybe 186, 150, and then 80 get selected. So you can make it all the way and not get selected.
Really?
So when I got selected, I was like, one of the greatest moments in my life. And that kind of helped change things for me.
And how was deployment after that? Like, what did you have to do as Special Forces?
I went to Afghanistan. You know, we did a lot of training for Afghanistan, did a lot more high-speed training, you know, more advanced skills with everything, whether that was just with tactical stuff, but also like, you know, human psychology, all that stuff, you know, because Special Forces, were force multipliers. It's unconventional warfare. So it's not like your typical conventional forces where it's just like a whole squadron, a battalion of just 3,000 men. There's each team has 12. So you got 12 guys that can do the equivalent of 3,000 people. So in order to have that type of training, it's just school after school after school, deployment after deployment. So I was actually gone more than I was thinking I'd be. Like I was always worried about being deployed, but I actually felt like I was home more because I'd be gone for 3 weeks and I know I could come home, get like a 4-day weekend, do really not a whole lot for a week, and then train really hard for another 3 weeks. So it was kind of broken up. It was better than that long, you know, consistent where I'm away from my family. But to my wife and kids, you know, it was no different for them. We're like, you know, you're here, but we don't see you before we go to school because you go to PT. We don't see you when we get home because you don't get off work till 7. You get home at 8, 9, whatever. So it was just like,
you're here, but you're not here.
Yeah. So I did that for 14 years, close to.
So it's very much like wrestling. You're ready for wrestling, but I mean, without, you know, getting killed and blowing people up and that kind of stuff, but
there's so many similarities.
Wow. That's amazing, man. So you're sitting there in Afghanistan as a Green Beret now. That's an achievement, man. That's huge.
We got to work. Well, each Green Beret gets a language. Mm-hmm. So that's part of when you get selected, they give you like your job and a language, and you have like 3 requests that you can do. Some people get languages like Farsi, Pashto, you know, Tagalog, Mandarin, Chinese. I got Spanish. I was like, yes.
Nice.
Here. Yeah. And they
teach Hatchet Junction like, came in handy.
Yeah. So no, it's like, I could use it. You know, it was, so I was blessed for that.
Are you fluent?
Oh yeah.
Oh, nice. That's awesome, man.
Pues me defiendo hablando español.
Huerito puedo hablar. Yeah, that's good.
Hablamos en español. But so I got to learn Spanish, and then I actually got to go to school in Colombia to learn better Spanish. So I got to practice that.
Oh, wow. So you went to Colombia. Jeez.
I went to all over Central South America, but that was like for language training. I learned in the States, and then when I kind of advanced further in my Special Forces career, in order to be a force multiplier and train other partner nations, I just had to be able to speak better, you know, as a diplomat.
Yeah, you can learn in school all you want, but you have to apply it. You have to go to a country and apply it. And that's how you really learn it.
It was that immersion training. So it was just like, hey, I learned more from, yeah, living there than I did at the school. Like at the school, I was like, dude, man, I go home and learn more on YouTube and hanging out with the guys at the gym down the street than the school. But it was, that was a great experience because it was, I got to see something different. And Colombians, they're not racist at all. It was great. Like you some people here that were just like, you don't speak English. And like people get frustrated. I went there and it was just like, oh, you don't know this? Hey, came up ways, come here. And then they would teach me like, you know, idiomatic phrases and how to get by and to do this. Like I wear their stuff, like this total like gringo. But
yeah,
then they're like, hey, this dude loves the culture, this and that. And it was more like family. Like I felt like I had like a posse like when I was down there. Like it was a great place.
That's cool, man. That's good to know, man. Colombia, I've been there, but just rusting, you know, we're in and out.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Wow. That's amazing, dude. That's really, really cool. So then where do you go from there? So now you're Green Beret, you're traveling, you're learning Spanish.
Yeah. I'm a team sergeant. I got to do a couple, take my team down south, went to Guatemala a couple times. And it was just getting too much first for my family and me. Well, it wasn't necessarily just with PTSD. Like I had, you know, a brain injury and stuff.
Oh,
to the point. Yeah. So I had TBI, I had vertigo. I have a lot of stuff. Like I had to go to actual occupational therapy, speech therapy for the longest time just to talk. And sometimes I'll stutter and pause if I'm having a hard time thinking, but just cause there's a lot of neurological damage, but my brain's healed, you know, for the most part, cause I had to get checked when I was in NCAA, but it was, again, like I said, I pause it just to think. Like it's there, it just takes a while to get out here and to find the words. Like if I ask for a cup, sometimes I'll be like, give me that cylindrical object that holds water and fluids, and like explain it like a scientist when I could just say, hey, give me that cup.
Right. No, that's good. I get it, dude. There's a little bit of that in me. I got sometimes like that where I sometimes can't say something and I'm like, I know what that word is, but then hold on a second, I can say it, but not say it. You know what I mean? I can get you to understand what I need.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, man.
I was doing that as a special forces operator. You know, I was forgetting things too. Like I would lose track, you know, just with stress. I had a lot of family issues, problems. So, you know, I'm, you know, in South America, not remembering that I had a class to give or go to the embassy to talk to somebody, or I did it. And I'm like, okay, we're going to do this week. And they're like, Roman, you already did that. And I was like, what? I was like, how do you just lose track of time? And it started off like innocent, but after a few years, it's like getting worse and I'm not getting seen for any of these problems. Cause I'm this Green Beret, and not just I'm a Green Beret. Like I'm this team sergeant. I'm like the top of the food chain, you know? So like you try other ways to use your disabilities for strengths, but it ends up like crumbling because those things like just build up. And if you don't take care of it, God, it just, that's why you can't remember stuff, or you're not sleeping well, or just doing anything. And it got to the point where I would learn so much and see so much stuff, whether that was with how we were training, the stuff that I was doing. Cause you know, there's a lot of human trafficking down south and all that other stuff. And then the war, dealing with that stuff. Me, I have 5 daughters, you know, and 2 sons. So it was just like, I'd see stuff down there and I'd come back home here and I'd see like practices that, just how easy, like my kids can just put anything on social media or do whatever. And me being like, no, like, you know, that's how we catch you. Or this is that, like they'll use the family. Or I see like the same car, like driving around, I would like pull all these surveillance tactics thinking, you know, people were after me and my family, not because I was crazy, but just because like you're trained that way. Cause that's all you, like you build targeting packets for bad dudes to get picked up. And then when you're just like, come home, it's hard to turn that off because you're
you recognize something a lot more than the normal person recognizes.
Yeah.
Even if it's not there, you're seeing a pattern and you're like, wait a minute, can I know this? Yeah. And no, a layman, a person not in the military wouldn't see that pattern. I told you, I get it.
And a lot of times sometimes you're right, because a lot of people that don't get busted are out in the open, not even being secretive. So that's how I can catch things. Just like, whoa, you got 10 people, and out of the 10 people, 2 don't have social media and a social media style life. There's something about those 2. Like, no, they just don't like it. No, there's something a little bit more.
Yeah. But maybe, but maybe not.
And why was I even questioning it? So it was stupid. And my kids, you know, not doing chores correctly, or they didn't fill out their chore charts. I would like lose my mind. So yeah. Sometimes I would avoid going home just so I wouldn't lash out or go crazy, you know? So there was so much compounding at that time where I just needed to, you know, walk away and get help for myself. And actually it took me a good year and a half to, like, again, do a lot of physical therapy for my body, rehab, learning, you know, the speech, the talk. And that was when I medically retired out.
You have to learn how to transition back into society.
Yeah, civilian life, because they don't work the same.
You know what? And this is totally not even on the same level, but comparing wrestling to that again, when I left wrestling and coming back, and it was always around, you know, wrestlers like, you know, Gallows and all those guys and all my boys and how I acted around them. And then I'd come back to Orange County, California and hang around some of my boys here. Then, and they're, you know, great guys and, you know, they're, you know, successful businessmen and stuff. But they all thought that I was just insane. And I'm like, I'm the tame one compared to all these, right? I'm the easy one compared to these guys. And like, I had to transition back into society. If they were like, you know, I'd be wanting to fight somebody. They're like, dude, you can't do that. I said, what do you mean I can't do that? I'm like, hold on a second. Okay. I'm not in wrestling world anymore. And it's the funniest thing. They all think that, like, I'm like this insane dude. And I'm like, I was so mild in wrestling. You don't even know compared to these guys, you know? Right. And that was now compared to like the 1980s with my dad, and those guys are even more just wacky and just like outlawed. So I definitely understand my dad a lot more now being in the business and having to transition out of wrestling. Oh man, I miss those times though.
Yeah, totally. And I did too. And that was the whole part. Like when I got out, I missed that as much as it drive me crazy, you know, just with the politics and all that crazy stuff. It was like, you miss that brotherhood, that tribe.
Yeah. You miss that alphaness, that being around alpha males. And you miss that. I remember my wife one time, we were watching something on TV. I think it was something about a biker gang, like a Hell's Angels or the Vagos or something. And, she goes, I see you could be in a biker gang. I said, what do you mean? She goes, well, I mean, not like that. She just the camaraderie that you're in wrestling. That's how you guys were. You guys would, you know, like family, you're like brothers. You know, they mess with one of you. They mess with all of you. I said, yeah. She's like, you don't have that anymore here. And I said, yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so I see that for sure. I see the people, a lot of vets getting out of through your position and going and finding it in like a gang, you know?
Because they don't identify, like they took so much identity as being sergeant, you know, so-and-so or this and that. And then when they get out and they're looking for a regular job, nobody cares that they were sergeant so-and-so. And that deals with them a lot. So then they, you know, start pounding the bottle and doing other stuff to try to feel motivated to do anything. And by then, like they've already let themselves go. And then it's just a vicious cycle. And a lot of them still don't want to get help because they think they don't need it.
Right.
And it's Hollywood does a bad portrayal of that, because every deployment that we get back, like the Army does a great job with giving you the tools and resources to become more resilient. They call it resiliency training, to where you go see the therapist, get some help, take 30 days where you just kind of reintegrate. But guys don't do that because they're like, there's a stigma behind it. And a lot of times we don't think we have PTSD because it's not what people think it is. Like, I don't have this flashback of, you know, being in the desert, the sand, or, you know, and have you watched Up in Smoke?
Sure.
Remember Strawberry?
Yeah, that's right. Like, yeah, totally, totally.
Charlie in the Trees, like, those are bad acid trips. Like, I've never known anybody, and I wrote a mental health workbook, and I've done lots of seminars and classes and discussions, and I always ask people if they've had those Hollywood acid trips where they're in the store and they just hear noises and they think everybody's a bad guy. They're like, no, like, you know, you have a split second where you kind of think about it, but that's why people say, like, I don't have PTSD because I don't have those flashbacks. But I have, you know, cold sweats. I have this, sweaty palms. I can't do this. I get nervous. I got to withdraw. Like, those are the things, because your brain reacts. Maybe not your body or, like, your vision, but your brain, like, recognizes something and it goes into this weird state. And you could be at church and all of a sudden be like, what's going on? But something clicked, and it's because you never processed it and got it in the right spot.
You know? Yeah, you go off on your kids because they didn't fill out their chore chart.
Right. And like, the same chemicals that are going through you now are the same ones that, you know, like a zebra has when it's running from a lion, and, you know, you're in a safe place. So it just, like, and that's where people think they don't have the issue, because they're just like, oh, I just, you know, I'm just aggressive. I'm like this. Like, no, dude, you need to figure out some stuff because, you know, your brain, you've got that amygdala, the hippocampus. Obviously, the stuff need to go where it needs to go. And the only way to do that is just checking a block and being like, yeah, let me just talk to somebody and figure out how to turn these negative emotions into healthy emotions, process it better. So I'm not dreaming about it at night. And not that it goes away, but that's why guys don't get help.
Yeah, I totally see that for sure. Tell me about when were you when you got struck by lightning?
That was in the Special Forces qualification course. So I was in a training course is trying to become a Green Beret at this point. And a lot of stuff was going on at this moment. It's not that I was having second thoughts. It's just, we got a good tax return one year by having so many kids that my wife's tubes, we got them untied. So we could try to have a boy because we just had three daughters at the time. And right off the bat, she gets pregnant, but is diagnosed with thyroid cancer. And it's, you know, past the stages, about to like go in everywhere. And she has to get it removed. But she doesn't want to get it removed because she still has the baby. And she can't do any chemo or anything like that. And it was just, it was a lot on us. And I'm still just trying to train to go to this phase of training, which is small unit tactics training, like Ranger school.
Okay.
But she has an ectopic, so a miscarriage. And she loses that tube. And, you know, we just spent $6,500 to get them untied. And she loses one, and she only has the other one. They say we have like a 13% chance of getting pregnant, whatever it was. So she just kind of goes into like, you know, she's distraught. And
yeah, she's in depression. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and depressed about it. And but now is a blessing because now she can get that thyroid removed because, you know, we got three other kids that really depend on her, and I do. But it was like, what do I do? You know, do I go to this next phase of training? Do I stay here with her? If, you know, I get out of it, you know, I'm not going to have the same momentum or training. You know, I'll lose a few steps. But I had a pretty good church family. Her mom was coming down. So we both were like, yeah, you need to do this because I'll be fine when I get out of surgery. I'm going to make it. You'll pass that course and you're just one step closer to getting that Green Beret and providing a better life for us. So it was mutually like where we made that decision. Where I'm in the STAR course, it's 5 points like STARS and it's miles and miles away from each other. And you're just on your own land navigating. We get our points, but I'm starting to feel sorry for myself. We all meet back up like at our call time and like, hey, guys that didn't get their points, we'll get to go the next day. Well, I got mine. It's like, now I got to wait another day. Plus, I'm already like questioning things. It's storming out. Just miserable. Morale is low. And all you have is a poncho. So you're going to lay in a puddle. And I was just trying to talk to God all day, whatever. Even trying to talk to my devil worshiper friends was like, hey, what do you think of Jesus? And they'd be like, he's the son of God. I'm like, come on, man. At least argue with me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, what do I got to do? And then I was like, I'm going to go to sleep. When I wake up, I'm going to voluntary withdraw so I can be with my family and I can just go back to the regular army. I was like, I had a good life. I don't know why I'm trying to, what I'm trying to prove. I don't need to prove anything. Have that talk. As soon as I go to sleep, wake up to a loud explosion, kind of like a car bomb. And I know I'm in the States, so it's freaking me out. I'm like, what's going on? It's bright white, but I'm electrocuted. I can't move because it like demolished the tree that I was laying underneath and nobody can move me because I was getting electrocuted. And anybody that was in a 10 meter radius was getting electrocuted too, but I was at the hub.
Really?
Yeah, my throat got swollen. My heart just like was like out of rhythm. And we thought it was done. I was like, phew, there was my sign. But when I got to the hospital, it was like, what was I thinking? Why was I talking, you know, like quitting? Like, I don't want to quit. I came this far. I'm like, God, I wish I could just heal. I was like, this was stupid. I should have never said that. And crazy and miraculous, like even the doctor, like if you were to talk to him this day, like he had never seen a recovery like that. And the next day, like I felt great. I mean, a little sore in my throat and chest, but they're like, hey, this guy can go back to training. Like my heart rhythm was good again. It was weird.
You're like, God, did you have to strike me with lightning to get me to actually decide to stay training?
It was weird. And because I ended up going like somebody.
Couldn't I have just had a dream or something?
Somebody had actually showed me like a Bible verse. It said like, God talks to those through lightning and thunder. I was like, but they didn't know I was having any talks with it. They're like, Roman, check this out. We just got, you know, the Our Daily Bread. There was some kid out there happened to come across. He's like, hey, Roman, look what was on my thing this morning. So it was just kind of weird.
Yeah.
But it was, I took that as like, hey, I'm on the right path. And then my wife got pregnant with twins.
No coincidences, man. I believe that. No coincidences. That's insane. That's okay. So you've been blown up multiple times. Your concussions. You're struck by lightning. You know, training to be a Green Beret.
I got dropped from a 15-foot tower.
Dropped from a 15-foot tower?
Yeah, during training, there's always crazy stuff, man. It was just.
Wow.
I got this huge scar. Yeah, it was just weird. Yeah, just another training thing. And everything is like pass or fail. So it's like, I end up like jacking my back up. I think I fractured like my T11, T12, but I didn't know that at the time. I just knew my back was really bad. And I still had 2 weeks of this serious course that I had to do. And luckily I had hit my head and it gashed it open. So they had to do stitches. And I was like, hey, they don't let you take any medicine during this time. Obviously, because you're out there rucking, doing a lot of stuff in the field. But I was like, my back is so bad, like I need to tap out. I was like, but if I can talk them into maybe let me have some Motrin just for my eye, because it was bad. But really, it wasn't for this. It was for my back and everything. And sure enough, they gave me some 800 milligram Motrins, and that got me through the rest of that course and passed. And when I got like my MRI and everything, they're like, oh yeah, you fractured your back and stuff. I was like, holy shit. I just went through a crazy ass course with a freaking broken, you know, back. And luckily I had some boys that were helping me, cause I couldn't always carry like the heavy stuff, and cause they knew I was bad off, but they didn't know how bad. So it wasn't just cause I was able to truck it. I had guys that were helping carry me.
So then you decide to leave armed forces.
Yeah. And I missed that tribe, and it was hard going from 100 miles per hour to zero. And plus I wasn't making that money anymore, that special forces money. And I didn't want to do contract work of what I was just doing, because it was toxic for me.
It's the same thing. You got to get out of that business. You're like, okay, I can't continue to do this.
No, I'm really good at it. I just can't. At least not right now anyways, because I'm not in a good mental place or physically, but I got physically good again. And I was like, man, what would I do if I couldn't fail? And I wish I could have been part of, you know, a college program. Cause you've seen all those dudes, like everywhere you walk, someone's wearing like a college team or this and that. And I'd be like, that would have been badass just to be part of that. And just like, you know, this is my alma mater. I was here, and I know the max age was 25. So I was like, I don't got a shot, but I was like, I still want to be a part. I was like, maybe I can be like the guy that mops mats or takes out trash or something. I'll maybe just write stuff down, but at least to be part of that athletic program, the camaraderie, something. And that's what I did, man. I just was like knocking on doors and happened to get kind of noticed. Like I kept coming there, and the athletic director, I didn't know who he was, but he just kept seeing me every day, just like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm just trying to look for the coaches. You need any help? No, I'm just here. And then after a few days, he was like, here, let me take you to their office. And then told me who he was and this and that. And he was like, I'm going to help you out. And I was like, oh, man, you never know who you're entertaining, really.
Right.
And they got me an interview with the coaches. And of course, they wanted me as a mentor role, but they already had four coaches by NCAA standards. So it was like, well, now where do we find a place for him? Are we going to make him the team manager? I was like, but the coaches were like, he wrestles and he's good, at least good enough to like help these guys and do whatever. To where one of my coaches got the idea. It was like, you know, Randy Couture was in the Army and he was 29 when he, you know, walked onto Oklahoma State. And they're like, you know, maybe that applies for you too. And I was like, what? And this time I'm 33, about to be 34. He goes, we'll give you a tryout. I'm like, yeah, you might as well walk on, because I guess they saw value in that. And sure enough,
at ASU, right?
Yeah, Arizona State. Okay. And they put me through the ringer for a long
time. Which is a crazy, awesome, tough wrestling, amateur wrestling team. I mean, Arizona State. So I mean, you could have tried to walk on at the community college, but you tried to walk on to Arizona State.
Yeah. I was like, man, they're not going to break me physically or mentally, because how bad I wanted it. And even the paperwork, I don't know. I just, even when I didn't have the liability insurance to practice with them, I was practicing with Ryan Bader. You know, he would let me
Bader, yeah.
his gym. Like, I had a lot of support, and nobody like were like, man, a 34-year-old wrestling, they're like, it's no, some were skeptical. They're like, it's not going to happen. Like, it's never been done. And then I would listen to stuff where, you know, like even Arnold, where he's like, he goes, when someone says it's never been done, well, I'll be the first one to do it. So it was like, okay, if I do this, I'm going to be the first guy to do that. And not only that, like, I belong here and I believe it. And it'll change things for a lot of people, because think about how many people were in the service, didn't know their eligibility was frozen and could come back and play football or play hockey, soccer, whatever they wanted to do. So it was, there was, it was more than just like me trying to fulfill my dream. It was just like, this can, this is going to benefit a lot of people. And sure enough, man, it did. It was great.
So you walk on and you get the tryout and you make the team?
Yeah. I mean, I made the team. It just took a long time for paperwork to go through with the NCAA.
Yeah, I'm sure.
A lot of checks and balances, but yeah, it was just, I made the team and I couldn't believe it. It was great. Like, I was
what,
like,
weight, what weight class?
197, like 184, 197, but
that's a tough division, man. That's no joke. I mean, they're all tough divisions.
And right off the bat, they're like, they knew like, hey, you're probably never going to start. You're not going to be our national champion, but there's 40 guys in the room. There's only 10 spots. So you kind of get it. Like, everybody knows the role. And for me, I'm always like, okay, that's fine. I was like, I know my role. I'm happy to be here, but I'm going to be prepared for the opportunity rather than have the opportunity not be prepared. And let alone a whole summer, a year, another summer program. And then we get to have our opening home meet and, you know, they make me a starter. So it was just like,
and now you're starting.
Yeah. So it was great. It was like, dude, I was like, I'm glad I just had that mentality or whatever. I didn't know it was ever going to pay off the way like I envisioned it. Like, I'd always dreamt like something like that would happen. Never really thought it would actually happen.
Right.
But it was crazy. Yeah. 2 years into it, like, I get my shot, you know, get my little Ruby moment and got to start where, you know, Sun Devil singlet at, even take away the age. It was just a great, great.
That's insane. I wrestled my entire life. And I told you this before, but I wrestled my entire life and I was never good enough to ever walk on to an ASU wrestling team. So, dude, hats off to you 100%. That's unheard of, man. And that's more crazy.
You broke up. There we are.
Yeah, okay. So I'll start that again. So, like, I've wrestled my entire life and I was never good enough to walk onto a college wrestling team, let alone Arizona State. And at 34, it's even more unheard of, bro. That's dude, your story's insane. This is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
How many matches did you end up having?
I only got to wrestle the actual starting match. Was just one. Prior to that was we, like, guys that aren't starters can
that's
wrestle
all you need. Matches. That's all you, yeah.
So
that's
I wrestled
all you needed, man. Matches.
And I got to wrestle at the U.S. Open. I took third there. So that was my first big thing was over after the first season was over, I got to wrestle at the U.S. Open. And it was one of those things where it's like, hey, this guy, we're going to see what he's actually made of. And you got your freestyle and Greco tournaments. And the first day, you know, I lose. I win a match and then I lose two. And I'm out of the tournament. So everybody that was like, oh, this guy, like, he's been training with Arizona State, this, he didn't even belong there. And it got to me. So, like, the next day I had one more tournament to do. And you always hear, like, Joe Rogan and everybody always say, like, hey, dude, 90% of the battle is just showing up. And I always say that too. And I was like, God, I was like, again, I already made history by competing there at my age and doing this. I was like, so I made it. And again, I was like, why am I talking like this? I was like, just show up and see what happens. You never know. Cause there's other people you don't know who are watching. My teammates were watching. Like, they were, I didn't know just how much behind me they were. Cause they were the ones that were coaching me in my corner during that stuff. And so I went back the next day and I was like, here we go again. We'll see what comes out of it. And, you know, I win my first match. Then the next one, the guy forfeits his match cause his ankle hurts. Then I advance again. Then I get a bye and I advance and I, you know, I'm wrestling for first and second, lose. And then I like got to make my way back, but I'm like, I actually can win this. It's like, if I beat these two guys, I can make my way to third and fourth and I could win. And, you know, shock everybody. And that's exactly what happened. I ended up taking third, and it was like, dude, I was like, I can't believe I almost robbed myself of this glory just by feeling sorry for myself when I just showed up and people got hurt, people gave up, and you know, I kept going and paid off.
Yeah. And you were ready. You were ready. You put the time in, you put the work in. It wasn't like you just said, okay, I'm here. No, you actually did what needed to be done. Showed, I mean, you're putting in the, you know, the work, you're in shape. I always say to, you know, people that are, you know, amateur wrestlers or even MMA fighters, I mean, you're going to beat people on your high cardio and a lot of them. You're going to beat 90% by being in better shape than them.
Oh, right.
There's, there's that saying that exhaustion makes cowards of us all.
It does.
So, you know, exhaustion, man, if you got more in the tank than your other guy and you can just get through it, some, you know, the odds are you're gonna beat this dude, you know?
Yeah, it was good.
That's awesome, man, dude. Good for you. Now it's done. You're done with your college career now. Did you end up graduating from ASU?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
So
what's your degree in?
Sociology.
Oh, wow. So now you can understand people too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do we influence people?
Yeah. Awesome. And then you decide to, all right, I'm, that's done. What's next?
Well, actually I started before then, like when I was, I actually got that, it was kind of weird. I got to start for that match for ASU. And at the same time, I got an email, you know, from the WWE about doing a tryout, and NCAA doesn't let you do, they don't let you do another professional tryout. So even though like, it's not like a professional sport combine.
It is to them. That's right. Yeah. It's weird how wrestling is categorized, and sometimes it's, oh, it's not real. It's not a sport. And then all of a sudden, oh yeah, you try to get insurance. They're like, oh no, you'd be easier to get insurance if you were a pro football player than a pro wrestler. I'm like, wait a minute. I thought you guys said this was fake for so long. And all of a sudden I can't get insurance. Right. And now I'm wrestling on the NCAA team, but I can't go try out for a non-real sport. I'm like, wait a minute. Where are the lines here? Right.
It was weird. But it was awesome because I was like, how do they know? Like, you know, I've been a pro wrestling fan. Like that was always, it's always what I wanted to do. And, even before all that, like I was reaching out to, you know, anyone I could, like, hey, I'm going to graduate in 2020, which is a year from now, but I'm going to hit the circuit and do that. So it's like it prophesied it. So when that had happened, I was like, I wonder if these people got in contact with them. I was like, hey, check this guy out. And cause I had the little documentary and my coaches were like, this is a big deal, and we don't want you to turn it down.
What was the documentary? We'll talk about it real quick, just so we can.
Oh, the doc. They did a little mini doc. You know, Fox Sports did one. It won an Emmy, and then USA Today wanted. It was like a short documentary, like 15 minutes, but
sure.
It was following me, so like it was all organic, like everything from just me wrestling with the team and stuff like that to actually becoming a starter.
Where can anybody see that at?
YouTube. You can just click Roman Rosell, you know, or Green Beret ASU, and that'll pop up. And
all right, cool. So guys, go check that out for sure. So then you decide, okay, so you're getting a call, maybe get a tryout here.
Yeah, the coaches were like, they knew I was already a pro wrestling fan, so they were just like, this is crazy. And they were like, yeah. They knew, like, I'm 30, you know, 35 at the time, and I'm not like these 18, 19-year-olds that still have other lives. They're like, yeah, take this opportunity while you can. But I didn't want them to think like, hey, thank you for letting me get famous and noticed. Bye. They were just like, no, hey, after you wrestle this match, like you can do this with a clear conscience. You can go do the tryout and we'll just make it to where they made me a student assistant coach. So it was cool. So I still got to be part of the team, everything. Like nothing changed other than my title, but I had to waive my eligibility. But it was good, you know. And so I got to do that, did the tryout and got a pretty good rub by them and started to do extra work for them. And during that time, that's when Dan Severn started training me.
Oh, nice. Is that who trained you for pro wrestling, Dan?
Right at the beginning, just to get ready for the tryout. I had a little crazy run with Teddy Hart for a little while, which we won't go into.
Teddy's insane.
So, like, because I was just like desperate to get training, and he's like, yeah, I'll train you. And it was just like, it was almost the same story as like Taker's story, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It was Buzzsaw,
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
Buzz Sawyer, So it was like one of those
take your almost, money, yeah.
Almost same scenarios. And it was a
you're not the only one in pro wrestling. Anybody's deciding to be a pro wrestler, get trained by somebody reputable. Somebody's just not going to take your money out there and not train you, you know, because that's kind of what happens a lot of times in pro wrestling is they'll just, you know, you pay them their money, they want it up front, and then, you know, before you know it, they skip town and your money's gone, you know? So that kind of sucks, but you always find those people along the way, especially if you keep going, you run into them as you heard on my podcast with Taker, and he ended up seeing Buzz again, you know?
It was but I mean, it was good because it happened early on, and I've been able to kind of recognize stuff like that since then. Because right off the bat, I did that, got trained. I was able to get into a pretty good school down in Mesa, Arizona, the Arizona Pro Wrestling Training Center.
Who was the trainer there?
Don Batali and Gabriel Gallo. They're names for professional wrestling at the King of No Rules, you know, Gallo and Don Vitale, they got a tag team with CWF, AZ, and they've been wrestling forever.
Awesome. So they trained you correctly, yeah, right?
I saw Kevin Sullivan put them over way before I went to the school. So I was like, cool, man, I can actually get into a school.
Yeah, sure.
And started training there.
And then that takes you to where now I see you doing some stuff with Al Snow and OVW. And
yeah, right off the bat. So I was training and I was working with Devotion Championship Wrestling, which is an affiliate of OVW right now. Vince Russo, you know, writes for this show, and they were on the CW network. And so it was like, cool. I got to learn TV and wrestle and stuff like that. And was able to kind of get, you know, I'm with Grunt Style. So the clothing company.
Yeah. Right.
So getting marketed through them and just new opportunity, sponsorship, then led me to OVW and then doing great stuff with Al and Chad Miller. And now they've expanded to where he has like the Al Snow Wrestling Academy here in Louisville, but he's got these other, you know, sister schools, you know, in the Northeast, in Utah, all these other places. So it's been pretty crazy. And then between that and, you know, wrestling at OVW, and I also now live in Georgia. You know, work for DDP now, so it's crazy.
So you're working for Diamond Dallas Page. Let's get into that.
Yeah.
Bang.
Like, you know, cause I'm a 35-year-old guy. He started when he was 35. Like, right. So he's been training me with, you know, with the yoga.
Awesome.
So, you know, I got Al training with psychology stuff. I got Dallas training me just to be yoga.
Do you get a lot of this? Bro, this is how you got to do it, bro. I always say, that's my Dallas Page, you know. I love Dallas to
in my place.
But he's a character, man. He's one of those guys that gimmick, like he's Dallas, DDP outside of the ring too. That's who he is. He just walks around. He's got that voice. He's, bro, let me tell you something, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's great. It was like it was meant to be, because the same way, like I've always been that self-promoter. I mean, look, I'm on shirt.
Absolutely. Hey, look, I got the Guerrero shirt on.
I love it. See, yes, we're all good. Cut from the same cloth. And he's like, write me. He goes, what do you mean you don't have this? You only have 30? Give me 70 hope spots. Write them down. Bring them back. Like the homework on top of doing, you know, the yoga. And he's helped me train for that so I can be a trainer. So.
That's great. With yoga, that's a great thing right there.
Yeah.
DDP. I remember in WCW when he first started taking yoga, and he starts doing some stuff, and he'd be stretching in the locker room. Chavo, come here, try this. And I'm like, all right, cool. You know, it's like, oh, that's good. You should get into yoga, bro. And then, you know, see where he's gotten since then, you know, and motivating so many people. That's awesome. I'm happy to see my friends and my boys succeed. That's really cool.
Yeah. So it's good. I relocated down there and I still wrestle with OVW. And Al, like I said, I still partner with them and doing a lot of great stuff. But while I'm in Georgia, I still train. You know, I'm training with QT Marshall at the Nightmare Factory.
Yeah, okay.
And so that's helped elevate my game, you know, too, down there. So no matter where I'm at, Louisville or Georgia, you know, I'm getting taken care of, you know, the right way, training with the right people, learning how to be safe.
That's the thing, man. You get the right way for sure. Watch your noggin. You've already had too many of them, you know, your head bangs. Watch those for sure.
And just
work, man. I always tell people, work as much as you can, get in front of people. That's where you perfect that craft. It's not, you can only learn so much practicing and being in the ring and rolling stuff. But once you get in front of people and start applying it and things are going wrong and things don't go as you see them to go and you pivot and you improvise, and that's where you become a pro wrestler.
Yeah, it's been great. It's been a great year. Just learning that, and like I said, all the partners and like collar and elbow in the 2020 Rookie of the Year.
Collar and elbow, nice.
Yeah. So
yeah. Rookie of the Year is as a, how old are you now?
35.
Third, the oldest rookie of the year. 35-year-old rookie of the year. That's
another
awesome.
Another record. Break that. So I broke Randy Couture's record, so now someone's got to break my record.
That's right. There'll be somebody, which is good.
There is. I know. It's a challenge. Come on,
what do you do outside of the ring and stuff? What are you, like, your hobbies?
Oh, man. Shoot. Again, it's like Jesus in pro wrestling.
Yeah, nice. So yeah, there you go. Like, it's got to be a lifestyle, yeah.
It is. Like, what am I doing on the side? I'm watching AEW, I'm watching NWA, I'm watching CWF.
Sure.
Same stuff I did before. And it helps me because now I can study. But I like to work out and I do speaking engagements and I like to help out with the mental health community just to kind of, because I still have my struggles, but the fact that, again, I keep going, I still see the fruits of it. And I try to show that to other people, like, hey man, it's not about the Roman train or all this other stuff. It's about like showing like that you can get places. Cause a lot of people don't know, like I'm driving 27 hours to a show for no money and then driving right. 15 hours back for a film tape and then driving 7 hours another way to drive 5 hours to another show for nowhere. And then doing those weekly. So just like that stuff to where I don't let anybody know until after I did it. So that way, so they don't be like, oh yeah, look at me. I do that. Hey, look, I did that this week. You can do it too. Kind of like when my wife left me, I didn't tell anybody I got divorced until I was homeless. You know, I go from making $6,000 a month to $800, and then I'm homeless in May. And I'm like, well, I'm going to show everybody what I'm going to do. I didn't know what I was going to do. I'm like, I'm going to go move to Louisville. From there, I'm going to see where that goes. And here I am now. I'm not homeless.
Right.
All this other stuff. But I didn't tell anybody till afterwards because it just shows like that was the worst thing that happened to me. Like talking about married, close to 18 years, somebody up and leaves you at like your peak. What are you going to do? And then I'm just like, God, I was really scared. Like, I got to leave state. I got to leave Arizona to try to create something. I felt like an 18-year-old again.
Yeah.
The fact that it happened, now I could share it and be like, okay, that was the darkest time, but I kept going. Like I would do appearance after appearance, do a show after show. And even though I wasn't in the mind for it, all that work was there. And eventually my heart caught up to all that work. And it's now I prepped the battlefield. It's paying off. And it was like, shit, I didn't know COVID was going to happen either. So it's like, I kept going to where it like allowed me to grow into what it is now. Had I quit, and I'd be another 2 years behind.
Yeah. Wow. And that's crazy. So you go, you're in Afghanistan shooting, getting blown up, things are going on, you're getting struck by lightning, you're walking on the wrestling team at Arizona State. Basically nothing can scare you. Nothing can rattle you now. And the leaving of a spouse is what does it. So that just shows you right there the how we are as a social animal and what really, really affects us,
Yeah. Especially with the kids.
Yeah, man, totally. That's you. That's a tough one, man.
That's good.
Yeah, good. You're seeing you're in a good place now, man.
Yeah, we split the kids, So we rotate the kids. So they live here with me, between Louisville and the other ones live in Arizona with the mom, and we'll rotate them out. So we at least had a good.
Yeah, you have a good split.
Wrote our own divorce for the most part because we were like, she just grew apart. And right. When I look back at the whole history of the 18 years, I was always
so
and surviving. It was like what you talked about, though. It's like it's just temporary because you're going to be able to rest later and pay for
right.
So, like, I did all this stuff now. Like, you think I was going to get a retirement. And it's like, no. So now I got to start all over again. But just would have been a little bit more patient, like, when the time comes or when, let's say, I don't ever make it, but do. I know I will. It's like, dude, like, all that, if you just would have hang in a little bit tighter, you'll be able to rest a lot more comfortably later.
That's true, man. That's true. Man, I appreciate you coming on, being on the show for me and with me. And Before we leave, we always do a little bit of like this thing called rapid fire on Suplex and Cerveza, yes. Where we kind of would just, I'll throw some questions at you and there's no right or wrong answer, and just kind of just see the fans kind of see what makes you tick, a little bit more about you.
All right.
You down?
Let's do it.
All right. So are you a Ford or Chevy guy?
Ford.
Good. Now, are you being in the armed forces? Are you a Stallone or Arnold guy?
Stallone. See the Green Beret.
Oh, there you go. Beret. Green Beret, right? From Rambo, right? Yep. I forget that. Dogs or cats?
Oh, man. That's rough. Because I have dogs, but I love cats.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong. There's no right or wrong answer. That's cool.
Yeah.
Are you a blonde or brunette guy?
You would think I'm a blonde guy, but I like brunettes.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Boob or butt? Boob or butt guy?
Boobs.
All right.
Yeah.
Nice. Hulk Hogan or Ric Flair?
Hulk Hogan.
All day long, the Hulkster.
Sorry, Rick. I mean, I love Rick, but.
Yeah, sure. I get it. Were you a Randy Savage fan or a Ricky Steamboat fan?
Randy Savage.
Savage.
Yeah.
That's right. Are you an Eddie or Rey Mysterio?
Oh, man. That's rough because I'm 5'9", so I felt like I was more like Rey Mysterio, so I was like more liked his stuff, but it's hard to like neglect all what he's done, but I was always like a Rey Mysterio fan.
Cool. All right. Were you – now, in amateur wrestling, when you got In amateur wrestling, when you got the choice, would you pick top or bottom, up or down?
Down.
Down, right? You'd like to escape, work from the bottom?
Yeah, I was never really good on top.
Really?
Yeah. These guys are like freaking Mustangs.
Well,
it's hard to like hold them down. It's like, so the only way for me to do it is if it was like illegal, just to keep these, you know, dudes down.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yep. Were you a double leg takedown guy or would you like to throw somebody like a lateral drop?
Yeah, throw somebody. I was always a throw. Yeah.
I'm a thrower for sure. I like that much better than, I don't mind taking somebody down. That's cool, but I like to take them down with some pizzazz.
Right. In a real fight, I'll double leg first.
sure, of course.
Get that 6'6" dude down.
Oh, yeah. Well, I always like to get those guys wrapped up, and they try to throw me, and then I just reverse the throw. that was the best. They try to throw me, I reverse the throw, and I land right up on top of them. That was easy. Tell me where everybody can – what you got going on right now? Where can everybody see you at? Where can they find you at?
So you can find me, my social media, you know, at Roman Roselle, or you can watch on Amazon or Roku. Now that you get the OVW network, so you can watch our shows, you know, on Tuesdays, Saturdays, whatever we do. And also for Devotion Championship Wrestling, you've got the CW network, and it's on Amazon now, Amazon Prime. You can watch, you know, all our stuff there.
What's it called? Devotion Championship Wrestling?
Yeah, DCW. It's like I said, it's one of the affiliates, like the minor leagues now for OVW.
Okay, great. Tell us when we can buy those that T-shirt. I know that the one you gave me, I wear that one all the time. It's actually really sweet. Yeah.
So you can get the T-shirts at Grunt Style. And then this one right here is my Rookie of the Year T-shirt for Collar and Elbow.
Collar and Elbow. So you can get them at collarandelbow.com?
Collarandelbow.com.
Cool, man. Brother, again, thank you. Your story's amazing. It's an incredible story, very uplifting. You're definitely a role model for a lot of people. So, you know, keep your head straight and keep plugging at it, man. You'll get there, man. Anybody listening, people tell you no all the time, and it's you can. It just depends how much sacrifice and how much work you want to put into it. So it's all up to you.
Oh, I forgot DDP yoga.
There you go.
If you're military, it's 50% off.
Wow.
So it's great. Like, you know, usually even around Christmas time, it doesn't even go up that high. 30% at the most. So
50% off of DDP Joseph for ex-military.
Yeah. And just keep staying tuned to DDP. Why? You might see this guy, you know.
Awesome, brother. Well, hey, I appreciate it very much. And we'll leave you with a bang.
Bang. Self high five, brother. forks out.
All right, brother. Thanks, man. You the man. Thank you, brother, for doing this. And again, all luck to you, and we'll see you around, I'm sure.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right, brother. Now for sure. Get his pants on.